finding the weapon was loaded with 30 rounds, and then he flipped off the safety and put the weapon in fully automatic mode. After a quick neck roll and a deep breath, he stood up to a crouch and began moving quickly through the shrubs along the wall towards the back door. Just like that, the equation had changed, not just for Court Gentry, but for the Vietnamese, for this mystery team of paramilitaries, and even for Phan Xiang himself. Everything was different now, because the gray man had a gun. And as he neared the back door, he pointed his big unsuppressed weapon at the ground in front of him and placed his finger on the trigger. The Zaslan force had successfully breached the three-story villa without making a sound, and now they moved in their train through a well-lit back hallway, closing on the sound of voices in a large room at the eastern end of the building. Vasily was fourth in line now. He and Sasha had cleared an empty storage room on their left, and now they all moved together, anticipating action ahead, but careful to avoid any engagement until everyone was up close and had the room blanketed with complete fields of fire. Vasily hoped to find a staircase in the back of the house so he could begin a top-down clearing of the villa. Experience had shown him that hostages and VIPs were normally protected vertically, meaning they were nearly always kept on or near the highest floor of a structure. But when the Russian officer found no way up at the rear of the villa, he realized he would not be able to clear this place without engaging the group of men talking to one another in the main front room. Still, with the Russian suppressed weapons, their tactics, and a little good fortune, Vasily felt confident he and his team could eliminate the men directly in front of them quietly without alerting the entire property. After that, he would find a stairwell to lead them up where, he assumed, Phan Xiang was being held. He moved himself and the three men in front of him to the right-hand side of the wall, turned around to the members of his team behind him, and motioned for the last two in the stack to move to the left side of the wall to widen the coverage of the big room ahead when they made it to the doorway. With hand signals, he indicated he wanted a wall flood, a room-clearing tactic that had half the team pushing into the room to the right, while the other half went left. By staying along the walls all the way to the corners, the six-man unit could bring a great amount of suppressed rifle fire on the room with speed, hopefully fast enough to squelch any hostile from firing back and alerting the men outside. Vasily was still in the process of giving this silent order, and a portion of his team was still in the process of focusing on their commander instead of on the threats ahead, when the entire dynamic of the operation changed in the space of a single heartbeat. Just outside the back door, only 25 feet from the rear man in the stack there in the well-lit hallway, someone opened fire with a fully automatic assault rifle. Bam, 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 bam! It was a short burst, but impossibly loud in the still of the night. Everyone within a half mile of the villa would have heard it and identified it for what it was, and virtually everyone within a half mile, Vasily felt certain, had a gun of their own. Vasily had no idea what had happened. He didn't have anyone positioned back there, but all surprise was lost. Any pretense of a covert entry just went out the window. The men in the rear of his formation spun around at the sound of gunfire, while the men in front began rushing up the hall, trying to close on the big room before the entire team was caught in the hallway, in the center of a fatal funnel. Vasily ran with Andrei on his left, just behind Sasha and Yevgeny. The group was momentarily divided in their reaction to the threat when two Vietnamese men in civilian clothing appeared from the main room. They both carried shotguns, holding them waist high, and their eyes widened when they saw the big, wet, dark-clad, huge men with guns and beards, all wearing night vision equipment stowed high on their heads. Sasha and Yevgeny opened up with their AKS-74Us, firing in full auto, dropping the first two men, though one fired a single shotgun blast as he fell. The buckshot went straight up into the ceiling, but more gunfire came out of the room at the end of the hall. Three members of the Zaslan unit arrived in the doorway now. They found themselves face to face with a half dozen additional men, most of whom were dropping down behind chairs and couches in the center of a large, high-ceilinged room with peeling wallpaper and wooden flooring. Four of the remaining men were PAV and infantry. The other two were wild tigers, and everyone was armed with rifles and shotguns. The Zaslan men had no time to scan for targets to try to identify Phan Xiang. They fired their suppressed weapons in fully automatic mode, pushing into the room over the dead men in the doorway, so that their colleagues behind could aid in the fight. and they did their best to lay waste to all threats in front of them. The Russians executed their wall flood. Vasily pushed to the right while Arseny and Sasha went left with Yevgeny. Behind them, Peter and Andrei took knees in the hall and covered the back door, ready to confront whoever was shooting out there if they came through. Zoya Zakharova raced across the open ground with her pistol out in front of her, her night vision goggles restricting her peripheral vision, but helping navigate her way forward in the moonless night. The fierce gunfight inside the building caused her to leave her cover to attempt entry herself, even though her run risked putting her in the sights of the nearly 24 PAVN soldiers 50 meters off her right shoulder. Mikhail and Ruslan were still prone, still behind her on the far side of the canal, and they were scanning the area to the east, ready to open fire on the soldiers as soon as they began moving towards the house. But the Russians wouldn't press their triggers until they had to. No sniper likes firing at night if he can avoid it, as the resultant flash from his weapon immediately announces his exact position to the enemy. Zoya hit the southern wall of the villa and called over the tactical interteam radio, begging for a report from the men inside. The gunfire she heard was from shotguns, unsuppressed assault rifles, and handguns, but she knew her task force's weapons wouldn't be audible here because of their advanced suppressors. Suddenly, the crackle of rifle fire kicked off from the east. This told her either she'd been spotted somehow in the darkness, or else the Vietnamese army was engaging her task force members through the windows of the house. Not wanting to take a chance that she was under fire, she dove around the corner, tucking herself between the generator and the western wall of the villa. Behind her, Ruslan and Mikhail began firing their suppressed weapons. She looked back to the canal and could see the flashes from their muzzles as they engaged the numerically superior force by the road. The battle raged on inside as well. Even though she still couldn't hear the sounds of Anna Team's rifles, it was obvious they were in the heat of a close-quarters war, and it was also obvious there was a huge chance they were going to kill Fan Xiang in the melee, unless they watched what the fuck they were doing. She worried that this op was disintegrating around her, and she wondered if there was some way she could get to Fan Xiang before the battle on the ground floor did. She looked up at the wall above her. Through her NVGs, she could see that the third-floor window, 20 feet above her head, was cracked open. An idea came to her quickly.
Honor One, this is Sarina. Be advised. I'm going to make entry on a top-floor window in the southwest corner of the property. I'll keep you updated on my location as able.
She heard no response from the team inside the villa, but she knew they had their hands full. They were Tier 1 professionals. So long as they heard her, she felt confident they wouldn't accidentally shoot her when they made it upstairs. She holstered her weapon, silencer and all, leapt up off the generator, grabbed onto the thick vines just below a decorative edge a few feet below the second-story window, and yanked herself up using just her upper body. Her feet swung in the air below her as her hands let go of the vines. She flew upwards, grabbed onto the windowsill of the second-floor window, and heaved herself up again. Zoya scaled the corner of the three-story villa as the gunfire increased, both inside the villa and on the other side of the property. She moved as fast as she could, racing against time to find Fan Xiang before it was too late. Court sat in the bushes with his back to the western wall of the big villa and his right shoulder against the porch up to the back door. His head was low enough that no one coming out the door on his right would be able to see him, but if someone exited the building via the back, with Fan Xiang in tow perhaps, Court would see them from behind as they stepped off the porch onto the ground. A dead PAVN infantryman lay here in the vegetation with him. The man's eyes were rolled all the way back, a bullet hole marred his forehead, and a massive wound hinged his skull open at the back of his head. It was a sickening sight, but something Court was trained to ignore. So he concentrated his attention on the sound of the battle in the house behind him. He'd wanted to make sure the attacking force got busted in the act of raiding the house, and his plan had worked. But now he wondered if this shootout just might get Fan Xiang killed. Court thought it was certainly possible, and if it happened, it would be his fault, since he was the one who exposed the attackers as they were in the middle of their stealthy infiltration of the site. But what the hell could he do about it except wait here and hope a couple of the assaulters rescued Xiang alive and came through this door while making their escape? He looked left and right in his NODs, and then he scanned up to see if any light was coming from windows on the southern side of the villa. To his astonishment, he saw a figure effortlessly scaling the wall above the generator. The operator was clearly going for the same window Cort had planned on entering originally, but this guy was doing it faster than Cort himself could have executed the climb.
Who the hell is that?
Cort sat there in amazement for an instant, and then his head cleared. He swiveled the Galil rifle around quickly, lined up the iron front post sight on the head of the target, and put his finger on the trigger. But he just kept it there. Was this the right move? He'd drop a Russian Spetsnaz officer, assuming that's who this was, in a hot second if it meant grabbing the USA's biggest intelligence coup since the inception of the People's Republic of China. But unlike the other guys in the villa, this one operator was not involved in the gun battle, and he was moving covertly towards his objective. Cort realized slowly that he should be rooting for this little guy climbing the wall, hoping like hell he was the one who made it to Fan Xiang first instead of those gun monkeys shooting the hell out of the ground floor of the building. If Cort wanted his target to make it alive out the back door of the property, this spider monkey on his left was his best shot. Cort would then just shoot the spider monkey in the back when he and Xiang exited. Cort cocked his head now and rubbed his eyes, shoving his fingers between his face and the eye cups of the night vision binos taped to his ball cap to do so. He only had a second or two to focus on the climber, but he saw the body shape of the operator, slightly wider hips, a full chest under the raincoat. In that brief moment, he realized he was looking at a woman. That was weird. Cort knew of no Tier 1 paramilitary force in the world that employed women on their assault teams. The climber slipped into the window on the third floor, and Cort looked back to the western side of the property. He kept silent and still in his hiding spot, his rifle at his shoulder. Woman or not, he still planned to shoot the operator if she left with Fan Xiang. The fact that she was female did not diminish the fact that she was in his way. Chapter 29. Fan had been lying there, frozen in his bed, afraid to move a muscle even though the gunfight below him had been raging for over a minute. For most of the shooting, starting with the crashing automatic fire right below his window, the fight seemed to be at ground level. But it was clear from the progression of the gunfire and the screaming that whoever was attacking this place was now just one floor below him on the stairwell that ran up the center of the villa. As he squinted his eyes to will away the anger, Fan's door flew open suddenly and he turned to look. Tu Van Duc stood there wearing a white suit and tie and waving a silver .45 caliber automatic pistol around crazily. He looked to Fan Xiang like a vision out of one of those Hong Kong action films he watched as a guilty pleasure on his computer. Behind Tu, one of his men, Fan had been told the man's name was Cao, had a semi-automatic pistol in each hand, and he held them both up in front of him while he watched the long hallway. Tu raced into the room and pulled Fan away from his bed and up to his feet.
"Come with me!"
Tu screamed in English. His eyes were wild with terror. Fan saw that the Vietnamese crime boss was nearly as terrified as he was, which only scared Fan more, but the young computer hacker did as he was told. Together the two of them followed Cao down the hall. Tu pulled Fan Xiang by the sleeve of his black hoodie to keep him moving along as they ran past the stairs in the middle of the hall, all the way down to a large musty bathroom at the far end. Here, Cao tucked one of his pistols in his underarm so he could open a small closet, pull out a plastic bag full of old towels, and then reach to the back wall. To Fan's surprise, a hidden panel in the closet opened, and he could see a dark, narrow stairwell, with wooden steps leading steeply down. Cao knelt into the closet and immediately began descending, while Tu pushed Fan, urging him onward. Fan stepped in and found himself fighting claustrophobia almost instantly, and when Tu pulled the wall closed behind him to hide the entrance, Fan realized he could not see at all. The leader of the wild tigers did not turn on a light. Instead, he just shoved and shoved from behind as Fan began descending, doing his best to fight his welling panic. Fan realized he was in a spiral staircase when his head hit the wall. He descended with the winding stairs, and soon he was level with the second floor of the building. The cracking of gunfire had dissipated somewhat, but as the men got down to the ground floor, Fan heard a fresh energy to the battle that was now being fought above him. Fan realized this odd stairwell went all the way down into the basement without stopping at any other floor. He thought it must have been some sort of secret escape route built by, or at least used by, the Viet Cong, who operated here 50 years earlier. The basement was a small, dark place with little in it other than standing water, a foul stench, and the splashing and scratching sounds of rats in the corner. Here Cao jabbed both his weapons in his belt, then knelt and slid 3 cinder blocks out of the wall. By doing this, he created a hole only 3 feet high and 1.5 feet wide. Cao said something to Tu, who immediately translated for Fan Xiang. Tu said,
"Cao will go first. Fan, you are in the middle. Hurry!"
Cao crawled into the black hole. Fan knelt down but hesitated. He turned back to Tu and shook his head.
"I'm sorry, I can't do it. I am afraid of small spaces."
Tu snapped back.
"And I am afraid of getting killed by the Americans. Hurry!"
"Americans? How do you know?"
"Because they aren't Chinese. They must be Americans."
Fan looked at the tunnel again, then back to the leader of the wild tigers.
"Where does this lead?"
"There's a barn behind the house. It leads there. We can run into the rice paddies and hide in the trees until the Americans leave."
"Why don't we just wait here? They won't find the entrance above, and we can just—"
Tu Van Duck pointed his silver automatic in Fan Xiang's face. He said,
"I will go, and I will not leave you behind alive, so that you can reveal where I went."
Fan turned back to the darkness and began crawling, his breathing audible and labored as his chest tightened. The Zaslan unit had been in near-constant enemy contact for the past 1.5 minutes, but they'd cleared the ground floor and half of the second floor, and now were outside a door at the end of a hallway. Yevgeny, Sasha, and Peter stacked at the closed door, while Vasily, Andrei, and Arseny moved up the stairwell. The team was relying on their 2-man overwatch outside to notify them of any hostiles breaching the villa below. Just because they'd killed everything that moved on the ground floor didn't make things safe for them down there, since the soldiers outside near the road could always come in and reload the building with more hostiles. Still, with only 6 men, Vasily knew he didn't have the personnel to leave men on the ground floor. Vasily had heard the call that Serena had entered through a window on the top floor, and for this reason only, he waited before going up the stairs. He called her on the inter-team radio, but she did not immediately answer, and he assumed she was probably moving silently. As he waited a moment, he turned to watch Yevgeny lead his 3-man team into the room up the hall. Anna, too, gave a squeeze on the shoulder of Sasha, the breech man in the group, and he kicked in the door, then pushed in with his weapon high. 4 Vietnamese men lay in wait, kneeling behind upturned tables across the room. They held rifles and shotguns pointed at the door, and they opened fire on the breachers. Sasha moved away from the door so his teammates could help him engage, and while doing so, he fired at the gunmen in front of him. His burst caught 1 man in the shoulder, but just after this, a shotgun blast hit him in the knee, buckling the appendage and sending Sasha sprawling to the floor. Yevgeny and Peter both riddled all remaining wild tigers with bullet holes as they entered the room. Sasha lay face down on the wooden floor by the doorway. From his position by the stairs, Vasily could tell Sasha's leg had been severed. Just as Vasily started to move to help, another door on the opposite side of the hall flew open, and a wild tiger with a snub-nosed revolver appeared, the gun in his hand spitting smoke and fire. The leader of the Russian SVR paramilitaries shot the man through the neck, sending him tumbling back into the room. With constant gunfire below her, Zoya Zakharova stepped out of an empty bedroom on the 3rd floor of the villa and looked out into a long hallway. 3 lights in the ceiling ran down the length of the hall. She aimed at the one closest to her and pulled the trigger of her Glock. The weapon thumped as the suppressor absorbed much of the noise from the subsonic ammo, and the light blew out. Quickly she shot out the other 2 lights in the hall, then pulled her NVGs back down over her eyes and stepped out, still covering her way forward with her weapon.
"Men down! Men down!"
The call came from Vasily, spoken over the sound of close gunfire. Things had clearly gone to hell below her, so all she could do now was hope that her target was safe up here with her. She continued up the hall quietly but quickly, knowing time was not her ally. Court heard the shotgun and rifle fire 1 floor directly above where he sat next to the porch at the back door. Along with this, the chattering fire of multiple guns on the other side of the villa told him the snipers by the canal were probably having an incredibly busy and incredibly bad evening. He scanned around with his NODs while he sat there and was surprised to catch a hint of movement on the far side of the barn, 50 yards southwest of his position. He aimed the Galil at the motion, but lowered it when he realized the action there was no threat to him. Three figures ran from the back of the barn and over a large open field towards the line of trees that separated the compound's property from a large flooded rice paddy on the other side. Cort cranked up the magnification of the night vision binoculars attached to his ball cap. Through the 10-power magnification, he could see the three men as if they were only 15 or 20 feet away. Cort squinted as he tried to make out faces in the dim green glow of the NODs. The man in front turned back around to wave the others onward. He was young and fit, with a beard and mustache, and he carried two handguns. The man in the middle was the smallest, his hands were empty, and he faced away. And the man in back wore an ostentatious white suit and carried a shiny automatic pistol. Cort scanned back to the man in the center and tracked him for a moment. Suddenly, the small figure stumbled, then turned back to look at the man right behind him. The American sitting against the wall of the villa 60 yards away saw his face clearly. Softly, Cort spoke aloud now. "I'll be damned. Fan fucking Xiang." No doubt about it, Cort Gentry had positive ID on his target. The Chinese man wore blue jeans and a black hoodie, and he was running for his life with the two men armed only with pistols. Fan didn't look like he had much experience running in a muddy field, or running at all for that matter. And the men around him looked like Vietnamese gangsters. The guy in the back looked like he could be a serious player in the organization, with his suit and tie and his shiny Colt 45. Cort looked around, quickly making sure there was no one else out here on the lawn. Then he launched to his feet and took off across the property as fast as he could. Zoya had cleared the entire third-floor hallway, save for the last room at the end. She used the tip of her silencer to push open the door, revealing a dark bathroom. She started to turn away, but noticed a big bag full of old towels in the middle of the floor next to the small door. She opened this door, leveling her Glock in front of her. As she expected, it was a closet, but the items on the floor just outside caused her to reach around the area to check for a false wall or a false floor in the little space. Just as she did so, Ruslan came over her headset.
"Honor 8 to all call signs. I've got subjects fleeing the compound on foot to the west. Multiples. 3. Negative. 4 subjects. They'll be out of my line of sight in 5 seconds.
Zoya raced across the bathroom to the back window, then looked outside. Through her NVGs, she could see 3 men running together, and a 4th halfway between the villa and the men in the distance. The man in back was quickly gaining on them from behind. She flipped up her NVGs, pulled a 10-power night vision monocular from her belt, and focused it on the group of 3 men in front. She was certain in an instant, Fan Xiang was in the middle of the 3.
"All call signs, be advised. Target is in sight, 100 meters west of Omega and running to the west."
Ruslan spoke next.
"I've lost visual. They are out of my field of view."
Zoya knew she could run down the stairs and take off into the back, but the lower floor had not been cleared of hostiles. She could climb out this window and try to make her way down the hall, but by the time she hit the ground, Fan and the other 3 would have entered a tree line another 50 meters from where they now ran, and by the time she got to those trees, they'd be long gone. She held the monocular to her eye with one hand and watched the men running away. With her other hand, she keyed her transmit button, knowing the best thing she could do right now was to thin the herd, to remove Fawn's protection.
"Honor 1, I need every gun I can get pointed out the back windows in the next 15 seconds. The subject is in a black hooded jacket and blue jeans, second from the front of the group approaching the trees. Eliminate all other hostiles in sight before they get into the concealment of those trees."
Vasily responded quickly.
"All honor signs able. Engage targets to the west from the second floor windows."
And then, to Zoya's astonishment, the man who had been running behind Fan and the other 2 stopped running suddenly, shouldered his rifle, and pointed it at the others. She had assumed he was one of the wild tigers protecting Fan, but before her eyes, his rifle flashed, and the first man in the trio in front of him fell to the ground. The crack of a gunshot came just as a second flash came from the rifle. The man in white running right behind Fan Qiang fell to the wet grass. The gunshot boomed back to the villa, and Zoya watched the man with the rifle run forward now and tackle Fan Qiang to the ground. He was a much bigger man than the three figures with him. She jabbed her PTT button again.
All call signs. The target has been... He has been abducted. There is some other party here at the Omega, and they have the target in pocket. I just see one subject with the target at this time, and they are heading west on foot towards the trees. The man with the rifle is now your primary. Shoot him.
Vasily was confused by Zoya's call.
Confirm your last, Tsarina.
Zoya shouted into her mic now.
All call signs at Omega. The smaller man is Fan Qiang. Do not shoot him. The larger man is a hostile. I repeat, the larger of the two is hostile. Drop him.
On the second floor, while Andrei desperately tried to stop the bleeding on Sasha's leg, Vasily, Yevgeny, and Peter arrived at separate windows at the back of the villa at the same time. They broke out glass with the suppressors of their AKs, then raised them to look through their red-dot holographic sights. Through their night-vision goggles, they could make out the two figures moving in the distance, and they distinguished their objective, Fan Qiang, from their target, the unknown subject, who now had Fan Qiang by the arm and was pulling him farther away from the scene. The sights on the short-barreled rifles were not enhanced, but rather simple holographic red dots, good for close-quarters battle, but less effective at distance. Still, the Zaslan men had the skill to hit a man-sized target on the move 200 meters away. All three operators looked through their night vision goggles, through the optics on the top rail of their weapons, and they lined up their red dots on the larger man, switched their weapons to fire a single round when the trigger was pulled, and began tracking their target to judge his speed so they could aim accordingly. Just as the three men were preparing to fire, they saw the larger man stop abruptly, spin around, and drop to both knees. Next to him, Fan Qiang stumbled, looked at the man with the rifle, and then started to run away, taking advantage of the hostile's action. The unknown subject raised his weapon now, but he did not point it at Fan Qiang. Instead, he pointed it back in the direction of the villa, 185 meters away. Peter said,
"What the fuck does he think he's doing?"
Vasily shouted,
"I am taking the shot!"
He slipped his gloved finger onto the trigger of his weapon. As he started to put pressure on it, he saw the flashes of gunfire coming from the rifle of the man on his knees in his sights. Vasily wasn't worried. He knew he was in no great danger. For this man to even see a man-sized target in one of the windows at this distance would be a hell of a feat. Hitting his target on his first try after running like that would take superhuman skill. And Vasily knew the man wouldn't get a second try. He'd be dead in 1 second. But as the Zaslan team member began to fire his AK, a fireball erupted right in front of him in his window, and his night vision goggles whited out, blinding him. To his left, Vasily heard Peter and Yevgeny scream in surprise, and all three men lowered their weapons, dove for cover, and lifted their goggles so they could see. An incredible explosion, louder than even the shotguns involved in the firefight, roared through the night, and the darkness outside turned to daylight. Inside the villa, those few lights still on went out completely, enshrouding the entire building in a blanket of darkness. Vasily lay on the floor rubbing his eyes with a gloved hand in an attempt to clear them.
"What the fuck was that?"
Zoya's voice came over the net.
"The son of a bitch shot the diesel generator at the back of the villa. He blew it up to blind our NVGs. I can't see a damn thing. We need to exfil Omega and go after the target now."
Mikhail's voice came next, transmitting from his sniper's hide south of the canal.
"On a 7-1, we're blind over here with that explosion. Our night vision gear is toast. Can't see the PAVN units approaching the villa. Suggest you egress to the west, now. We'll lay down suppressive fire as long as we can. Then we'll have to retreat."
Vasily was up on his knees now. His goggles would be whited out for several more seconds, maybe up to a minute. And he didn't have time to wait. So he activated the flashlight on the rail of his rifle. As he began moving to the staircase with the other men, he punched his transmit button.
"Anna 2, call in the helo. Get them here in 10 minutes. Roger that."
Back in the hallway, he found Arseny kneeling over Sasha. He wasn't even rendering aid. Vasily could see that the fallen operator had bled out from his catastrophic leg wound. Vasily just said,
"Get his weapon, but leave him. Move!"
Chapter 30 Court Gentry flipped his night observation device on his ball cap up and used his naked eyes to watch the huge fireball roll up higher than the roof of the villa, then fade to black in the moonless sky. He'd fired a dozen rounds from the levee into the diesel generator, hoping he'd get lucky, and the result was even greater than his highest expectations. Diesel fuel was harder to burn than gasoline, but he knew a hot round puncturing the wall of the unit and sparking off metal in exactly the right part of the 60,000-watt generator could ignite the pressurized fumes, and that explosion could lead to a catastrophic detonation of the entire 2-ton device. He'd seen smaller diesel generators get hit by rifle fire in the field before, but he'd never seen anything like this explosion. He was momentarily proud of himself and wished like hell somebody had been around to take a picture. He hoped this move might slow down anyone chasing him out of the property and add to the chaos inside the villa. And since the paramilitaries who hit the house were all wearing night vision gear that would be sensitive to light, he knew that anyone near a back window when the big device blew would have to deal with annoying whiteout conditions on their equipment for up to a minute or so. Court's own night vision goggles were flamed out for the next minute as well, but he considered this a small price to pay. Of course, he had no idea he had been a second away from taking multiple rounds from multiple weapons when he blew the generator, but he did know he was not out of the woods yet, either literally or figuratively. There were still a lot of foreign commandos and a lot of Vietnamese soldiers and gangsters, and they all wanted what Court had, the Chinese cyber warfare specialist. Court turned away from the villa, still illuminated by the fire pouring out of the wreckage of the generator, and looked across the dark levee. Fan Xiang was barely visible in the bad light, but Court could see that he had fallen to his knees in a mud puddle. Fan climbed back to his feet and ran on, but Court caught up to the small man right at the tree line and snatched him by the arm, then pulled him on in the same direction, pushing with him through the thick brush and trees, though neither man could see more than a couple of feet in front of them. The Chinese national stumbled several times. He seemed terrified, exhausted, and unable to keep up the speed Court demanded. Court encouraged him along with curses and shoves. The 6 surviving Russians in the villa raced out the back door, their weapons high, sweeping for threats in all directions. Zoya was last through the door, her pistol at her side, but she was the first to see a man in civilian clothing leaning around the north side of the house with a shotgun in his hands. She fired 3 rounds, hitting the man once in the arm and once in the chest, crumpling him dead to the grass. A second man tried to fire blindly around the corner next to where his partner fell, but Peter dropped to his knees and fired a long burst at the odd stone masonry there, tearing it away with hot, brass-jacketed lead. It took fewer than 20 rounds to expose the shooter behind the wall, and just one more round through his heart to end the threat. The Zaslan team and their SVR task force leader continued sprinting to the west across the wet field. The 2 Russians lying prone south of the canal had fired a total of over 150 rounds at the PAVN soldiers positioned in low ditches by the road, killing a few, wounding several, and preventing the rest from leaving cover for most of the firefight. Mikhail had the scoped sniper rifle, so while he took fewer shots, he had more hits. But without Ruslan there to help him by firing short bursts with his fully automatic AK, then crawling a few yards to the left or to the right and firing again, the much larger force of Vietnamese soldiers would have targeted the pair of them and cut them to pieces in the opening moments of the skirmish. Still, some of the Vietnamese had by now crossed the road bridge over the canal, and they were moving up the tree line closer to the 2 Russian paramilitaries. So after hurling a pair of fragmentation grenades to the east, Ruslan and Mikhail took off to the west as fast as they could, while still maintaining some cover in the thick foliage. Their escape was helped when Vasily sent Arseny and Peter to the barn with orders to each dump a pair of 30-round magazines at the Vietnamese force to the east, less to kill the remaining dozen or so men, and more to keep heads down and force the PAVN soldiers to second-guess the wisdom of a counterattack. The ploy worked. And soon, all 8 surviving members of the task force made it to the 2 bodies at the tree line on the levee at the western edge of the property. They made a quick examination of the dead men, not wanting to dally here for long at all, because they were less than 200 meters from more than a dozen armed soldiers who very much wanted to kill them. Zoya ignored the dead body lying face down next to a pair of pistols, and instead rolled over the older man in the suit and tie. She flashed a red light on his face, choosing this color on her tactical flashlight because red did not carry as far in the dark. She said,
"To Van Duck, the leader of Khan Ho Hang Da."
Vasily grabbed her by the arm roughly and pulled her back up to her feet.
"Nobody gives a fuck. The target isn't here. Let's move."
They took off again for the tree line in pursuit of their target and the unknown subject who'd stolen Fawn out from under them. Court Gentry and Fan Xiang pushed out of the tree line, and by now Court's jerry-rigged NODs were operational again. Through them he could see the large flooded rice paddy to the west of the villa, a levee that ran west along the south of the paddy, and another tree line on the northern edge of the paddy, 200 yards away to his right. Instead of jumping into the water and continuing west, Court jerked Fan Xiang's arm to the right and continued north at the edge of the trees, knowing that anyone who came after the two of them would be able to spot them in the waist-high water, for the 10 minutes or so it would take them to slosh through to the other side. If they continued north in these trees, they wouldn't get as far away from the villa as quickly as he would have liked, but at least they'd be able to move with some cover. Fan Xiang had muttered some words in Mandarin, but more than anything, he just seemed in shock and completely spent from the effort of the past few minutes. Court finally spoke to him now, leaning into the smaller man's ear to do so quietly.
"You are Fan Xiang, a Chief Sergeant Class 3 in the PLA, Unit 61398. Your hacker name is Funky Monkey. I know you speak English. Listen very carefully. You are in a lot of danger, but not from me. I'm going to take you somewhere safe. Nothing bad will happen to you as long as you do what I say."
"But who are you?"
"Well, I'm not the Chinese and I'm not the Vietnamese."
"You are American, obviously."
"I'm the good guy. Let's just leave it there for now."
"Where are you taking me?"
Court did not answer for a moment because he didn't have much of a plan. He wanted to get himself and his package out of danger so he could call Brewer. She'd have to take care of their escape after that. Fan repeated himself.
"Sir, where are you taking me?"
Court yanked the kid along, and as he did so, he said,
"Cambodia."
"Cambodia is to the west? We are going north, aren't we?"
Court did not slow his hard march.
"Right now, kid, west is a bullet in the back. We'll get there eventually. Just do as I tell you."
Fan stopped talking as ordered, but his heavy labored breathing told the American holding him by the arm that this kid wasn't going to jog all the way to Cambodia. Within a minute, Fan confirmed this.
"I can't keep moving like this. I'm tired."
"Sure you can. You have no idea all the amazing things you are going to do tonight."
"Amazing things? What amazing things?"
Court thought he heard a helicopter in the distance now. He couldn't see it, and by the faint thump of the rotors it was still a couple of minutes away. But he had no doubt it was heading in this direction.
"Like not getting shot," Court said.
He pulled the man harder now.
"That would be amazing."
Fan said nothing else as the two men struggled through the vines and bushes along the edge of the rice paddy. After reaching the northern tree line, they stayed deep within that cover, Court stopping occasionally so he could listen for the approaching helo. When the Russians crossed through the first tree line, they found themselves looking over a rice paddy that must have been half a square mile in size. Zoya scanned with her night vision and then again with her thermal optic. She said,
"Nothing."
Peter said,
"They entered these trees 3 minutes before us. How the hell did they cross this paddy so fast?"
Zoya looked around, again through her NVGs.
"Impossible. They are either under the water, or they stayed in the tree line. The canal is south. Maybe they went north."
Vasily said,
"We aren't hanging out here, Kushka."
Zoya turned to him, but before she could speak, the co-pilot of the MI-8 came over the radio and announced he would be overhead in 2 minutes. Vasily ordered the Hilo to pick them up in a dry clearing at the edge of the paddy, and then Yevgeny flipped on an infrared beacon and threw it overhand to the middle of the landing zone. While they waited on the helicopter, most of the team pulled security, keeping their guns and their attention back to the east in case they were being pursued by the Vietnamese. Fortunately for both parties, the PAVN officers who hadn't been killed inside the villa in the opening moments of the raid had the good sense to load their men into their trucks and bug out to the south, vowing to return with a company-sized force at first light to collect the dead. This would also give them time to come up with a story. The commander of the 9th Military Region in Khao Tha was on the payroll of the Wild Tigers, and this was his sector, but everyone here knew that if Hanoi found out the truth of what happened here, that a dozen uniformed military working security for a criminal organization had been killed or wounded at the hands of some foreign force, the implications, both foreign and domestic, would be massive. Court could hear the approaching helicopter now, but he couldn't see it through the impossibly thick strip of jungle here north of the big rice paddy. It sounded like it was coming in for a landing somewhere just 100 yards or so southeast of his position, and Court hoped like hell it would load up with those Tier 1 shooters and just fly away. Fan had been compliant as they humped through the trees, and other than his heavy breathing and grunts of pain when he cracked his shins against roots or bumped his forehead on branches, he'd been relatively quiet. That all ended suddenly when he pulled to a halt and leaned over to put his hands on his knees.
"This is impossible. Are we continuing in the jungle the entire way to Cambodia?"
"Negative. We'll have to get into the flooded paddies that lie between here and there. Trust me, you'll miss walking in the jungle about 2 minutes after you start sloshing through that shit."
Fan said,
"We can't just walk through the rice paddies."
"Sure we can. I did it once tonight already."
"But will there be swamp rats? I heard rats in the basement of the villa."
"Not too many in the paddies. The snakes killed them all."
"Snakes?"
Fan said it so loud Court put the man in a headlock.
"Shh," he said, holding the man in a vice grip. "Listen, Fan, I'm here to protect you, and I promise I won't let you get killed by a snake. But I can't promise you a Russian sniper or a Vietnamese mortar round won't kill you if you make too much noise."
Still in the headlock, Fan's head rotated up.
"Russians?"
"Those guys at the villa that tried to grab you tonight were Russian, I'm positive."
"I don't understand. I thought that was you."
"No. We both came for you at the same time. I got lucky and I got to you first."
"Are you going to tell me you saved my life?"
"Not really. Those other guys wanted you alive too."
"If those people wanted me alive, it would be bad if they wanted me dead."
Court conceded the point with a nod, and then the men started walking again. Fan said,
"But you are a killer. Like them. You shot Tu and Cao like they were nothing."
Court said,
"If they were nothing, I wouldn't have shot them. They were a threat to my operation."
"It is so simple to kill?"
Court regarded the question while pushing through a thick portion of vines.
"I don't kill people who aren't asking for it. Those guys were drug smugglers, and they were hiding one of the most powerful computer hackers to ever work against the interests of the United States."
Fan stopped walking again, and he looked up in the darkness.
"Really? Who?"
Court just grabbed him by the arm and pulled him on.
"You, asshole."
"You captured me because you think I have hurt the U.S.?"
"It's not a capture. It's a rescue."
"This doesn't feel like a rescue."
"You think the Wild Tigers were going to just say, 'Thanks for the help and thanks for getting half our guys killed. You can go now?' No. That's not how criminal organizations work. They would have used you as long as you could be used, and then they would have killed you because you knew too much."
"I had to work with them. The PLA is looking for me."
"You're damn right he is. Colonel Dai sent a dozen men into the building in Ho Chi Minh City this afternoon."
"Dai? No. He is a lieutenant colonel. He is the deputy director of Security Unit 61398. The colonel in charge is named..."
Court said,
"Dai got a promotion because the other guy was put in front of a firing squad after you ran."
Court didn't know why he said that, It wasn't going to help this kid's morale to know he was getting people killed for his actions, although to Court it seemed perfectly obvious. But clearly Fan was under no illusions about the trouble he'd started by running.
A lot of people are dead now. All because of me.
Yeah, Court agreed. And the night is still young.
The crew of the Russian MI-8 racing in from Cambodia wore night vision gear, so they flew their helo straight to the LZ without lights, and they touched down without shutting off their engines. All members of the task force, save for Sasha, of course, quickly boarded the helo. Just as the pilot lifted off and turned the aircraft back to Cambodia, Zoya Zakharova put a cabin headset on, and she spoke into the microphone. She ordered the pilot to run racetrack patterns over the massive rice paddy and trees that rimmed it. Vasily put on a headset of his own.
3 minutes! You have 3 minutes to look for the target, and then we are out of here!
The helo crossed back and forth once over the huge paddy, then flew lower, closer to the tree line on the north. Here it began slowly following along the length of the trees, just 20 meters above the ground, while Zoya, the pilot, and the machine gunner all used their night vision and thermal gear to try to find any hint of two men hiding there. Chapter 31. Court Gentry lay under a narrow line of triple canopy trees that divided one rice paddy from the next, and he listened to the massive engines of the big Russian helicopter as it neared his position. Under him was Fan Xiang. The small man just lay there, limp, panting, in pain both because of the tight chest and leg cramps from the most intense cardiovascular workout of his life, and due to the fact that a man who weighed 50 pounds more than him was crushing him at the moment. Court and Fan lay behind the rotting root ball of a felled broadleaf mahogany tree. Court's plan was to keep their thermal signature broken up by both the trunk and the few inches of standing water here in the muddy hole, left when the tree tipped over and ripped its roots from the ground during the last monsoon season. Other than his head, Fan Xiang was completely covered by the muddy water, but Court kept his torso and one arm out of the goo, because even though he didn't want the helo to see any bit of him or his thermal signature, he wanted to keep his rifle pointed over the root ball, in the general direction of the MI-8. Court lined the rifle up on the helicopter above, using its engine and rotor noise to locate it, hoping he was aiming more or less at the cockpit. He didn't really think he'd shoot it down, and he doubted he'd do much more than announce his exact location by opening fire. But if it became obvious the helo knew where he was, Court decided he'd rather go down with guns blazing. Court's mood had deteriorated dramatically in the past 5 minutes. On the helo's first pass, Fan had tried to race down the tree-covered levee and into the tall stalks of rice in the flooded field, thinking it could hide him better. Court understood the capabilities of thermal optics and knew Fan had made the wrong call, so he tackled Fan, but with more force than he'd intended, and the two of them rolled and slid down a muddy embankment. By the time Court righted himself and grabbed both his captive and his rifle, he realized his backpack had slipped off his shoulder in the tumble, and now it was somewhere either higher on the levee or down below the surface of the flooded rice paddy, and looking for it would put him in view of the approaching helicopter. Now as Court lay here hiding in a little hole like an animal, he realized he had to come to terms with the fact that he no longer had a phone, money, papers, surveillance gear, food, or water. He was so furious with himself he almost wanted to engage the big Russian helo with his stolen Galil rifle, if for no other reason than to expend some aggression. But after some struggle, he kept his composure and did not fire, and the helicopter continued on to the east. Minutes later, he saw it pass back to the west, picking up speed and climbing away from the rice paddy as it did so, and Court felt sure it was flying away from the scene and back over the Cambodian border. Court almost wished he could hitch a ride. After a short while, he stood back up, and then he yanked Fan Xiang roughly to his feet. He considered going back to look for his pack, but that would necessitate a climb back up onto the high levee that would wear Fan out even more, and a fruitless search that would waste time they did not have. He thought again about the Russians who'd hit the house, the woman on the team armed with only a pistol, and the MI-8 that was now flying them back over the border. After a moment, he told himself it wasn't all bad, because even though he had a long way to go before he'd be somewhere safe and dry, he figured he had one thing those assholes in the helicopter did not have. He had Fan Xiang. Fan spoke up just as they began moving again to the west.
I am not an athletic person. I am too tired to continue.
The last part was delivered in an unmistakable whine. Court said,
Listen, Fan. If I have to sling you over my shoulder, I'm going to be even more pissed off.
I am trying, sir. I am trying.
Try harder.
After a minute more, Fan said,
Sir, what do I call you?
I don't speak Chinese, and there is no one else here. If you say something in English, I will assume you are talking to me.
Fan nodded as he walked.
Yes, of course.
As soon as the MI-8 dropped the Russian task force off at the Phnom Penh warehouse used by the SVR, Zoya climbed out of the helo without saying a word to any of the operators. She carried her own equipment and barged straight through the metal door, ignoring the small guard force protecting the building. Several vehicles took up the main floor of the large, well-lit room, but in the back by a kitchen, a row of green cots and boxes of equipment was set up next to a row of tables used as a gun cleaning station. Zoya passed these by as she headed to an open metal staircase that led up to a small office above the warehouse floor. Here, she shut the door, locked it, and walked over to her own private sleeping area. Still covered in mud, grime, and crystallized sweat from the night's operation, she pulled out her secure satellite phone and contacted her control officer in Moscow. She relayed the entire evening's events. As she did this, she was certain Vasily was downstairs doing exactly the same thing to his Zaslon leadership, but Zoya didn't give a damn. She was in the right, not Anna One. Yes, they'd lost a man tonight, and they'd failed to secure their target, but Zoya had clearly ordered the team to stand down and aggress before hitting the villa. It was Vasily who demanded they continue with the mission, and the results of that decision spoke for themselves. As far as she was concerned, Vasily was the one who was going to take the heat for this fuck-up. Zoya explained to her control that she didn't know who had Fan Xiang now, but she didn't think it was the CIA. She'd seen only a single person involved in the Chinese computer hacker's capture, and that was most definitely not the way the CIA operated. If the taking of Fan Xiang was in fact an American operation, it had been done by proxy. The kidnapper, Zoya maintained, was perhaps a foreign national who'd been watching the villa when the Russians arrived, and he'd then seen an opportunity to act when Fan, Tu, and the other armed Vietnamese gangster tried to flee the scene. The lone wolf who got lucky scenario was the only one that made any sense to her. She thought about the man she'd identified as a CIA officer several days earlier in Hong Kong. He'd been alone at the time, although that had been quite a different situation. He'd been drinking in a bar trying to get information about some men who disappeared, which was not exactly a Tier 1 commando raid on a building surrounded by 50 gunmen. After she'd relayed all her intel to her control officer, she was told to wait by the phone for a return call. She hung up and went to the little bathroom off the office, and here she stripped out of her gear and clothing. In the bathroom light, she found leeches in her underarms and above where her belt had cinched her pants tight to her skin, and she sliced them away with a combat knife distractedly, with no great distress. After flushing the creatures down the toilet, she saw in the mirror that she'd picked up some bruising on her ribs, but she couldn't even remember how it happened. She turned on the little shower. The pressure was that of a garden hose, and there was no hot water. Still, she took a small bar of soap out of the backpack pocket where she kept her toiletries and stepped under the flow. 5 minutes later, she was clean and dried off and dressed in jeans and a black cotton shirt, and she sat on her cot looking at the phone. A minute later, it rang again.
Hello?
Her control officer talked for only 2 minutes, and when Zoya finally got a chance to reply, she was cut off, told the decision was final. She hung up the phone and sat quietly on the cot in the little office. but only for 30 seconds. Then she stood, opened the door, and descended the staircase. There, the 7 surviving members of the Zaslan team all sat on their cots in the living area on the small warehouse floor. Most of the men by now wore just their boxers or civilian tracksuits. Sasha's bunk lay empty. It was clear the men had been talking together, but everyone shut up as Zoya approached. Anno 1 still wore his grimy clothing, and he still held his sat phone in his hand. She knew he'd been on a long call. Zoya walked up to him and stopped, just looked him hard in the face. Vasily said,
"Look, Koshka, these things happen. You tried to bite off more than you could chew. You got in over your head, and then you..."
"You told them I ordered you into Omega."
"You did order us into Omega."
"Initially, yes, but when the PAVN trucks arrived, I told you to stand down. You know that, you son of a bitch."
The big commando shrugged.
"By then it was too late. By then we were already taking accurate fire, and I determined the only way was forward."
"You lying piece of shit. There was no fire. That came after you hit the building."
She looked around the room.
"Every one of you heard my order."
No one spoke.
"Really? Are you all going to back up Vasily when you know he was the one who directed you to hit a building with 2 dozen PAVN around the perimeter?"
She turned back to Vasily.
"You had me removed from the task force. You had me recalled to Moscow. All to cover your ass and to make you feel better about your fuck-up. The fuck-up that got Sasha killed."
Vasily pointed a finger at her, got it right in her face. But before he could speak, she snatched his arm and jerked it down with her right hand, yanking the unsuspecting paramilitary officer off balance. She threw a hard left jab to his face, connecting perfectly with his jaw and mouth, compounding the magnitude of the punch by pulling him down and into it. Vasily's head snapped back and he fell to the ground. And then he got back up. None of the other Zaslan operators moved, while Vasily touched his hand to his mouth and then looked at his blood-covered fingertips. Zoya stared him down. She didn't have the strength to defeat Vasily in hand-to-hand combat. Objectively, she knew that. But her fury had surpassed her judgment. She wasn't going to run, and she wasn't going to hit him again. Instead, she waited for what she knew was coming.
"Dewey!"
she shouted. "Come on." The paramilitary operator slammed the back of his hand against her face, sending her spinning to the ground like a rag doll. He stood over her while she slowly rolled to her knees.
"You're a don, Koshka. You never were a team player. Go home."
She remained there on her hands and knees. Blood dripped from her nose, and the inside of her mouth began to swell. She spit on the floor.
"We could have hit him. We could have just sat back and watched the villa from distance until the PAVN left. We could have taken Fan at a time of our choosing. The actor who took him couldn't have done it if we sat back and secured the area, and Sasha would still be here."
She pointed to the empty cot.
"Sasha would still be sitting right fucking there with the rest of you idiots."
Vasily wiped his mouth with a dirty rag from the gun cleaning table. He said,
"On a team doesn't sit back and watch. My men are not the guys you send in to run surveillance."
"Right,"
Zoya said, slowly climbing to her feet now.
"Next time, I'll do everything myself."
"The only thing you will be doing by yourself is flying home to Moscow. Me and my guys will take it from here."
Zoya gave one last look at the team, and then she stormed back up to the office. 5 minutes later, she returned with all her gear loaded in 2 backpacks. Her nose had tissue jammed in it, and the right side of her face was puffy from the blow she'd taken. The SVR motor pool had allotted the team 4 vehicles, which were parked side by side on the warehouse floor. 3 Toyota Sienna minivans and a 20-year-old Toyota Tundra pickup truck. Zoya opened the chain-operated garage door, climbed into the Tundra, and drove off without even a glance at the men standing around watching her go. As soon as Zoya was out of the parking lot, she fished in one of her packs for her satellite phone. Quickly, she dialed a phone number as she drove through the darkened streets of Phnom Penh. She knew that the local assistant resident of the SVR for Cambodia would be home asleep, and there was no way he would be aware of the decision Moscow had just made regarding her status on the task force. She didn't know the man well at all. They had just met for a few minutes the day before. He'd given her his mobile number, and she knew his instructions had been to give her whatever she needed for her mission. The man answered with a rough, sleepy voice.
Hello?
Zoya said.
Ivan? I need help.
Sarina?
I need information. Fast. Either I can come over.